Thank you very much for the opportunity to speak at this prestigious conference today. And myself and Graeme have put together this presentation, which I'll actually present, and I think Graeme will take the majority of the questions. At least that's the plan anyway. So the title is Manipulating the Rumen Microbiome to Address Challenges Facing the Australasian Dairy Industry. But coming from Ireland, I'll also include a few snippets about the Irish dairy industry. But before we start, we'd like to thank the organising committee for inviting us to make this presentation today, and particularly like to thank Danny and also Nikki for all your help with getting us here. So the dairy industry and the food industry face a number of challenges, in particular in relation to the dairy industry, which is obviously the focus of the talk today. Well, population growth is obviously a challenge globally, but it's also a major opportunity for the dairy industry to produce more products to feed the planet, but we need to do it in a sustainable way. Climate change, of course, is the big challenge in relation to environment and degradation, and of course, addressing the new regulations and taxes is a major challenge that needs to be continuously addressed in order to be sustainable for continued dairy production. In relation to world population, it's increasing rapidly and expected to reach 9 billion people by 2050. And global food demands are naturally increasing in parallel. And of course, global agriculture will need to increase significantly and by up to 60% by 2050 in order to meet the increasing populations of the future. Climate change, including drought, heavy rainfalls, flooding, increased temperatures are major challenges in this respect. And of course, can be very negative in relation to agriculture and food production, diminishing productivity and diminishing food nutritional quality as well. Just briefly to show some of the areas or the areas globally that are expected to experience significant population growth and decline. The growth is shown in the red areas, so you can see that there's significant growth expected in areas like South America and Africa and many parts of Asia as well, whereas the more northern climates are not experiencing growth in the same way. So with these increasing demands, milk production and dairy production and food production needs to increase in a sustainable way. So on this slide, I just want to show you milk production, Ireland versus New Zealand over the last number of years since 1985. So in 1985, Ireland and New Zealand both produced similar amounts of milk, about 5.5 billion litres. Over the period, by 2013, Ireland still produced about 5.5 billion litres, whereas in the same period, New Zealand quadrupled its milk production. And of course, the reason why Ireland didn't increase its production at that time was the quotas that were imposed upon us, which significantly, of course, impaired growth in the industry. But in 2015, the quotas were raised. And so there's been a significant period of growth since 2015 in the Irish food and agri industry. Shown here are some of the stats. So dairy exports were 4 billion euro, were produced in 2017, growing 19% over the previous year. Dairy accounts for 45% of all sales internationally from Ireland, with UK being our number one market abroad, and China is now number two. Of course, the whole area of Brexit is a concern for the industry in Ireland at the moment, because we don't know how the UK will sit in the future in relation to trade. In Ireland, a number of strategies have been developed to grow the industry as a result of removal of the quotas. And one such strategy has been the Foodwise 2025 report, which recommends the increase in the value of agri-food exports by 85% to 19 billion by 2025. Of course, there's an expected increase in the value of primary production as well, and an increase in the amount of jobs in the industry in Ireland as a result. And indeed, it is a very vibrant industry at the moment in Ireland. In Ireland and in New Zealand, the feeding regimes are similar in relation to the pasture-based system. But of course, across many different parts of the world, feeding regimes differ based on the climate. Going from the pasture-based system, as I mentioned, to the more intensive total mixed ration system. So advantages of the pasture-based system are listed here. So the reduced production costs, the low carbon footprint, the sustainability. It's a natural way to feed the animal and produces product which are higher in polyunsaturated fatty acids, and so produces a healthier milk and dairy products. In Ireland, as I'm sure here, the pasture-based milk production has been used as a marketing tool to promote grass-based dairy as a healthy milk produced, and indeed the industry takes a lot of value from the grass-based dairy production system. We've done a number of studies looking at comparing the quality and processability of milk from grass compared with TMR indoor feeding systems. And just shown here are a couple of papers recently published demonstrating the differences in composition of milk over the entire lactation, with the main differences being seen in the milk fatty acid composition as a result of grass feeding. It's, as I said, higher in unsaturated fatty acids compared to the TMR feeding system. And so, of course, the butter is softer and yellower in colour compared with TMR feeding systems. We also looked at the rumen metabolome and microbiome as a result of different feeding systems. So that's just showing the design of the study, where 9 cannulated animals were on the different feeding systems, and rumen samples were taken and analysed by NMR at the Metabolomics Innovation Centre at the University of Alberta in Edmonton. And what we found was that there was a clear separation of the metabolome as a result of grass feeding system compared with indoor TMR feeding system. And some of the metabolites that were found to be altered as a result of grass feeding were formate, as shown there, and some amino acids and also sugars, including maltose. And these have potential implications for greenhouse methane emissions, but we didn't actually look at that in this particular study. So the contribution of agriculture to greenhouse gas emissions is significant. Overall, agricultural production contributes about 13% of greenhouse gas, with methane playing a significant portion of that. Looking at, on this slide, we're showing the greenhouse gas emission profile by sector, and you can see that livestock type, in particular dairy cattle and sheep, and to a lesser extent non-dairy cattle, are the main contributors to the greenhouse gas emissions from the agricultural sector. Methane, as I said, is the main gas produced by as a result of rumen fermentation. It's an end product of rumen fermentation and is excreted from the ruminant, primarily through the mouth. And methane is 25 times more potent than carbon dioxide in making the planet warmer over 25 years. So it is important in relation to global warming. So, of course, there are a number of targets set by different countries in order to mitigate methane emissions. And so the 2030 framework for climate and energy, as laid out by the European Commission, requests a 20% reduction in greenhouse gas emissions by 2020 and a 30% reduction by 2040. By 2030, sorry. Furthermore, in New Zealand, a similar demands have been put on the system. So in by 2020, it's required to have unconditional target to reach 5% below the 1990 greenhouse gas emission levels, and by down and up to 20% by and ideally up to 20%. That's what I mean. And by 2030, under the Paris Agreement, the target is to reduce greenhouse gas emissions by 30% below 2005 levels, and by 2050. But it needs to be reduced by 50%. So you can see the significant demands on the sector to comply with these demands. So the rumen microbiome is a central regulator of metabolism in the animal. It generates energy. It's involved in health promotion, obviously growth and productivity and yield. And there are opportunities to modulate the rumen in a positive way to improve animal health, potentially decrease methane production, decrease nitrogen leakage, and increase productivity, growth, and yield from the animal. But understanding rumen microbiota is essential. And indeed, the group in here in Palmerston North are among the world leaders in understanding rumen microbiome. So the rumen consists of a complex consortia of microbes that are involved in the breakdown and fermentation of ingested material. As I said, methane is one of the end products and is released into the atmosphere. And rumen microbes are influenced by diet and the carbon source. And the rumen microbiota composition has been shown to be primarily manipulated via dietary approaches. This is just a slide showing some of the fermentation pathways involved in rumen metabolism. So the ingested feed is broken down to various components, including short-chain fatty acids, and carbon dioxide and hydrogen are the main sources of energy. Are the main substrates for methane production via the methanogens, the archaea methanogens. Major study has been conducted to look at the rumen samples and the rumen composition across different parts of the world. So it's quite a complex slide, but what it's showing, say, for the different regions like North America, Europe, Asia, etc., you can see that there are two pie charts. The pie chart on the left indicates the bacterial composition of the rumen microbiome, and the pie chart on the right for North America, for example, shows the archaea. So if you compare all the right-hand pie charts for North America, Europe, Asia, etc., there are actually not many major differences in the bacterial rumen composition across the world, and even less differences for the archaea, that is the right pie chart for each of the regions. A core bacterial microbiome has been described in this study for the rumen, and they found that the bacteria, I don't really want to chance this, the bacteria shown in the box there were found to be consistent among the different regions of the world and were referred to as a core bacterial microbiome, so including Prevotella, Ruminococcus, and Butyrophibrio, and the others listed there as well. And similarly for the archaea, the two methanogen groups, Methanobrevibacter, listed there, accounted for 74% of rumen archaea, and so were consistent in the different regions of the world. This study looked at a comparison then of the overall microbiome of animals that were high methane producers compared with low methane producers. And what the slide shows is that, well, what the study showed was that there was a separation of rumen microbiome composition in sheep that were high methane producers compared with low methane producers. And the different genera that were found to separate are shown on this slide. And in particular, of note, was the Sharpeia groups that were found to be particularly high in the low methane producing sheep compared to the high methane producers. And the study went on to look at the different metagenomic pathways that were involved in, that were upregulated in the high versus the low methane producers. And what was found in particular, a number of different pathways were found to be enriched in the low methane producers, including amino acid biosynthetic pathways and short chain fatty acid biosynthetic pathways. And shown here is the lactase dehydrogenase genes that you can see were particularly enriched in the low methane producing animals, and Sharpeia again was particularly enriched in lactate dehydrogenase. So the functions of the microbiome was different in low methane versus high methane producers, and certain genes and pathways were identified that were potentially responsible for the sheep being low methane producers compared with high methane producers. And indeed, a hypothesis was developed as a result of this study to indicate, to show the important bacterial processes that influence hydrogen and methane formation in low and high methane sheep. So what it says is that the low methane producers, or the low methane animals, converted ingested sugars primarily to butyrate with low amounts of hydrogen, which was a substrate for methanogenesis. But on the other hand, in the high methane microbiome, butyrate and acetate were produced with higher, significantly more amounts of hydrogen, leading to significantly increased amounts of methane produced in this microbiome compared with the low methane microbiome animals. And that paper was published recently in Microbiome, and Graham is the lead author on that. Studies were also conducted to look at co-culture of Sharpeia, that I mentioned already, with methanogens, and they found that methanogens are affected differently by Sharpeia in co-culture. And indeed, it was found that by incubating the methanogen, the methane producer, with Sharpeia, this particular methane producer was significantly reduced as a result of co-culture, whereas the other methanogens on the slide were not. A significant effort has been put into developing a large reference microbial gene catalogue of isolated cultures from the rumen, and the Hungate 1000 collection is that reference microbial genome. It consists of 410 microbial genomes created by various researchers involved in rumen microbiology research, and the genome sequence of all of these strains have been sequenced and interrogated. And so this work has is defining substrate utilization and end product formation of organisms to understand better the metabolic potential and to enable selection of appropriate organisms for use as direct fed microbials, probiotics, and feed additives for ruminant nutrition. So the rumen microbiome can be influenced by diet, and forage concentrate ratio can influence it in that respect. So easily digested carbohydrates lead to increased propionate-forming bacteria, decreased fiber-degrading organisms, decreased protein breakdown, and increased feed efficiency, whereas low-fiber diets are also associated with reduced methane, and high-grain diets are associated with a reduced methane emissions per unit of food compared with more fibrous leguminous products. So the rumen ecosystem, as I said, is a very complex area, and these next generation technologies such as metagenomics, metatranscriptomics, and metabolomics are helping us understand rumen microbiome function understanding how the rumen can be manipulated in order to potentially reduce methane emissions from the rumen. So a number of strategies have been investigated to manipulate rumen microbiome and thus reduce carbon emissions. And these are either via direct inhibition of the methanogens that are responsible for methane production in the rumen, or via a redirection of hydrogen away from methanogenesis. And as I said, a number of dietary approaches have been investigated by various researchers, including sort of phytochemicals, which have been shown to alter rumen microbiota. These involve condensed tannins, which bind to proteins in the rumen and alter protein metabolism, and also have been shown to affect rumen microbiome composition. Other factors that have been tested include those listed here, saponins, which are secondary plant compounds, tannins, essential oils, and organosulfurs. And various studies have shown that all of these have the potential to reduce methane when methane in ruminants when fed to animals. Other compounds have also been shown to lower rumen methane production, and those are listed here, including chemical compounds, chloroform, bromo, chloromethane, and all the others listed there. Seaweeds are also showing potential. 3-NOP is a new specific inhibitor of methyl coenzyme M reductase, which is therefore an inhibitor of methanogens in the rumen and has been shown to be effective at methane reduction. Terins and statins are also inhibitors of methanogens, have been shown to be effective in various animal studies. And the mode of action of many of these compounds is that they are structural analogues of essential cofactors and therefore inhibit metabolism in the methanogens. That brings me on to direct-fed microbials, which are another potential way of managing methane production in the ruminants. And these are live microorganisms used to supplement feed to exert a beneficial effect. They've been used to increase growth in the rumen, they've been shown to increase growth of cellulitic and lactolytic bacteria, improve rumen fermentation, stabilize pH, etc., as listed there. And also the LAB as direct-fed microbials can potentially have a role in rumen in depressing rumen methane production in the rumen, either directly via inhibiting methanogens or indirectly via inhibiting other rumen bacteria that produce substrates for methanogens, and so have the potential to shift rumen fermentation towards propionate, which would be a positive move. Some of these products have been tested and are used in agriculture. So Saccharomyces cerevisiae has been shown in artificially reared calves to produce a number of benefits, including reduced diarrhea, reduced fever, reduced antibiotic use, in boost the immune response, etc. And there are a number of products available, including this LactoPro Advance, which contains that Megaspira rumen microbe that's been shown to convert excess lactic acid to butyrate and increase rumen pH and thus alleviate lactic acidosis in the rumen. And so these are all beneficial direct-fed microbials that have potential to improve animal health, but maybe also methane reduction. But we're interested in finding new direct-fed microbials that might have the ability to inhibit methanogenesis in the rumen. And in that regard, these would be alternatives to antibiotics. And indeed, there is indeed a great need in the world for new antimicrobials, targeted antimicrobials. So antibiotics as currently used in medicine are broad spectrum and inhibit a large range of microbes in the human gut or in the rumen if used. But targeted antimicrobials are required in order to target the particular pathogenic or active agent. So there is a lack of new antibiotics under development, and the clinical pipeline are just modifications of existing antibiotics, which is not sustainable. And the WHO has identified 12 classes of priority, including the need to find alternatives to antibiotics for medicinal purposes and also potentially for agriculture. So in that regard, we're involved in a screening program looking for new antimicrobial activities. And this involves plating different bacteria on solid media, co-culturing with specific pathogens or maybe with methanogens in the case of the study I'll introduce in a moment. We also are involved in silico screening. and mutagenesis and synthesis of novel peptides that have the potential for antimicrobial activity. One such bacteriocin is shown here. It's a bacteriocin called Turicin, which is produced by the microorganism here in the middle, and it selectively kills all the bacteria around it. It selectively kills Clostridia difficile, which is the overlay on the plate. But you can notice that certain bacteria, close members of the Clostridium difficile, is not inhibited. So this is an antimicrobial compound, a peptide that's gene encoded. It's a new class of antibiotics, which are narrow spectrum and just kill Clostridium difficile. And these are the types of bacteriocin producing microbes that we're also now focusing on in terms of inhibiting methanogens in the rumen. This study just shows as another approach, an in silico approach for identifying new bacteriocin producers based on genome sequencing of 213 lactobacillus genomes, which led to the identification of 38 new strains, which were previously not known to have bacteriocin production. And indeed, 5 novel bacteriocin producers were found as a result of this in silico approach. This is just another slide from the same study, in which it was shown that bacteriocin production was widespread in lactobacilli, and each of the strains shown there with a dot or many dots is a particular member of the lactobacillus genome, the lactobacilli that has a range of different bacteriocin producers, some of which were previously unknown. So this bacteriocin arsenal is now available and we are testing the bacteriocin arsenal as a potential to inhibit methanogens. So we have, for example, bacteria that can produce all these different bacteriocins, and this is just a subset of actually what we have available, including nisin, which has already been shown in studies to be effective at reducing methane in the rumen when fed as a direct fed microbial, but it is broken down in the rumen by rumen proteases, and so its potential, it only has limited potential, but there are opportunities to modify these bacteriocins in order to make them less degradable by proteases in the rumen. So bacteriocins are potentially useful for shaping the rumen microbiome. And the hypothesis behind a project that we have ongoing called MethLab, which is about reducing methane in the rumen via lactic acid bacteria. The hypothesis is that bacteriocin producing lactic acid bacteria could shape the microbiome to produce less methane. As I said, it's already known that nisin treatment can reduce methane production. And so there's the potential for novel bacteriocins to be even more effective in that regard. Shown on this side and on the last side, I was just going to point out why have I all these logos at the bottom. These are the partners involved in the MethLab project. And as I said, it's about refining direct fed microbials and silage inoculants for reduction of methane emissions from ruminants, with the objective to develop a biobank of strains with the potential to reduce methane and then to make those, to upscale those and make those available for future use in agricultural systems. So lactic acid bacteria, direct fed microbials have the potential, well, that we already know they can increase feed efficiency, milk yield, carcass weight, daily weight gain, reduce pathogen shedding, including E. coli. But also they have the potential to lower methane production and improved yield can be simultaneously achieved, which is also a benefit. So to conclude, major challenges facing the agriculture and microbiome solutions are a way to address some of the major challenges in the dairy industry, including climate change and enhanced productivity for feeding the planet of the future. Also, they have the potential to address antibiotic resistance with the opportunity to develop new antimicrobials and for improved food, developing new foods for health. Okay. And so lastly, I'd just like to conclude by thanking the funding agency, ERAGAS in Europe, and the Global Research Alliance, which is funding the MethLab program in both Europe and New Zealand. And listed there are the members of the consortium. And thank you for your attention.